Yes, bring Audrey in so she can introduce our guest, Mrs. Cochran. And I will now turn the meeting over to Mrs. Cochran.
As Sue was telling you about the problems in the metropolitan area, one of the problems that came to my mind was transportation. My district is a long way over here and many, many highways and byways to follow. But it was very, as you see, a great deal of interest in this topic because of the good attendance that we have this morning. Before I begin my speech, my introduction, I would like to call your attention to the National Civic Review for October. It was suggested last spring that you already subscribe to this for you. And I really feel that this is a must for a delegate to read for CMAL, particularly now. In the October issue, you will find, beginning on page 503, at least three articles which are pertinent to county government and to county problems. And when our item is written and read, I'm sure we will refer to some of this material and you will be able to make an evaluation yourself on some of the material that you have read and found in here. The topic this morning is the role of the county in a Twin City metropolitan area. We're very fortunate to have the Executive Secretary, Mr. Keyes, speak to us this morning. Mr. Keyes is really very noble because the Association of County Commissioners is meeting next week, beginning Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday in Rochester, a big job which he has to plan for and expedite. And he also has to go to Washington before that time. So he was very good to act as our moderator this morning, because I know he's pressed for time, and we do appreciate it. Thank you very much, Mr. Keyes. We also have Mr. Cafferty, who is a Washington County Commissioner from Stillwater, I believe, and Bob Johnson from Anoka, who is the County Attorney from Anoka, and Mr. Cowles, who is Director of Budget and Purchasing from Tennepin County. We also plan to have Mr. John Gobney from Ramsey County, but as he's a lawyer, he was in court this morning and unable to come. Mr. Keyes will introduce the topic and the speakers, and we'll take over from here, Mr. Keyes.
Thank you, Ms. Cochran. You know, times haven't changed very much. Coming into the door, I heard the whistle. It's about like the bosun's pipe piping in the board. It took me back to my Navy days in much of a hurry. My job is to be a moderator here and sort of blow the whistle on the panelists and try to keep the thing lined up just a little bit, and I don't propose to make a speech. I think that we can set the stage for this by just making a couple of quick observations about county government as it exists typically today in Minnesota, and I'll make the observation that even though there's a great variety in the form and structure of county government from state to state, our county government in Minnesota is probably about in the middle. Thankfully, it's not quite as bad as it is some places, and it hasn't advanced in changes quite as much as in other areas. So we kind of stand in the middle. Our size of county is a lot like other counties in other states. We don't have as many as, say, Kentucky with 159 counties and states smaller geographically than we are. We have many more than the 39 counties of Washington State, which is about the same size as we are. We vary in population from the huge county of Hennepin, where we are this morning, 840 plus thousand people down. Pardon? 950? Well, this must be a new estimate. I was going on the census figures. Well, all by way of illustration of one point, and that is in attacking the problem of the metropolitan area, the urban type problems, what were the ground rules yesterday don't always suffice for the ground rules today. A very dynamic, fluid situation. But we do have this great variety of counties throughout the nation. We have this variety in Minnesota. County government as a form and structure has existed with some similarity from way back to the Anglo-Saxon times in England. This moved up through the Stuart and the Tudor times of England, just previous to the colonization of this country. The people as they came to this country, mainly English-speaking people, took their governmental forms that they knew in the old country, particularly England, and brought them to this country. This is why we can trace back our county governmental form through here in Minnesota, back to our territorial days, to the similarity at that point to Wisconsin law, New York law, Michigan law, and then back to the form of the shire government in England just previous to the American colonization. The thing that's important is that in the grant of authority to the shire governments of England, the Crown said, on the one hand, you shall do certain things. You should collect the taxes, you keep the peace, this sort of thing. And not only that, prescribe the form in which the function will be carried on and operated. This was transferred to the colonies. And instead of having, well, at first we had the Crown authority in the form of the Crown Charter. But as we became a nation and set up our individual states, the authority of the Crown became exemplified in our state constitutions and in turn the authority of the legislature, saying to the units of local government, particularly counties in this case, you shall do certain things. You shall maintain a welfare program, you shall build and maintain roads, you shall conduct elections, keep the peace, levy taxes. These are assigned responsibilities to county government. These are the historic responsibilities of county government. Substituted the authority of the Crown for the Constitution of the state and the acts of the state legislature. In Minnesota, it's precisely it. We cannot attack a problem in county government in many instances here in Minnesota without taking a look at the constitutional provisions. And then next, what has the legislature provided in implementation of the constitutional provisions? It's specific. In 1958, the legislature proposed to the electorate of this state a so-called Home Rule Amendment. The voters in 1958 endorsed it. It was part of our constitution. It says that the legislature may, by law, provide for county charters. So here is the constitutional provision for the charter. Second, the legislature has not to date enacted the enabling statutes to permit the individual county to go forward and make provisions for a county charter. This is the general rundown of, very, very quickly, of some of the antecedents that give us some of the problems of form and structure here in Minnesota dealing with county government. As I say, once again, this is common to the areas throughout our nation. The states that have advanced home rule for counties have gone through the steps in which we are engaged. First of all, changing the constitutional provisions, and then giving attention to legislative provision, and then last but not least, attention to the actual developing of a charter and getting it endorsed by the voters in the individual county. I just want to give you just this much, telling you that these things have existed for all these hundreds of years. So I do this quickly to say, do not condemn county officials for their form and structure of this unit of government. They're not entirely blameless. I think we're going to show some areas where we're not blameless this morning. But particularly, we have this framework in which to operate. Now, I'm going to make a speech. I made too much of one now. I'm going to take time from these other people. Let me tell you just a little bit more about each of these gentlemen who are members of the panel. Mr. Cafferty is a county commissioner from Washington County, former school teacher, was reformed. Got him out of the schoolroom, got him in county government. He makes his living in the insurance field, the life field. He happens to be a vice president of our state association, so he's one of my bosses quite directly. He has not told me what I can and cannot say this morning. Mr. Johnson, in addition to being county attorney for Anoka County, is a member of the Minnesota Municipal Commission. He has been a member of the commission from its inception when the first appointments were made by Governor Freeman. So he has this large area of experience in dealing with the individual municipal problems of incorporation and annexation throughout our whole state. So some of the remarks he's going to make are going to have the background of his experience as a member of the Municipal Commission. Mr. Cowell is by official title the budget, I guess actually standing start with the purchasing director for Hennepin County. Hennepin County has a special act setting up a purchasing department. But in addition to that, by stretching some of these legislative pronouncements, the Board of Hennepin County said there has to be somebody correlating many of the activities of county government. A very effective way, of course, of correlating some of these things and keeping people a little bit in line is a very difficult one of controlling the budget. So he has the additional assignment of being the budget director, which means preparing the budget in the first instance and then seeing that the expenditures stay within the budgetary line set down by the county board. He has worn a number of additional hats by a special assignment, particularly given to him in his last 2 or 3 years, so that you might say, actually, he's much more of a county administrator than he is merely a purchasing director, which is, I guess, probably the actual framework of a statutory title for the office. He has seen these new functions come to county government in Hennepin County, county hospital, for instance, the new court system that is just about to be fully implemented, and so on, some of the problems with the implementation of the court system. He has seen these things happen, has been part of the shaping, the crafting of these new programs, ideally suited to talk to you today about what is happening here in Hennepin County. These are the people that are going to be talking to you today. I'm going to call on them in almost reverse order. We'll start with Stan Cowell, talking particularly on his experiences here in Hennepin County and against the idea of the proliferation, divided authorities in county government.
Thank you very much, Al. Actually, the law creating the form and structure under which I work is the budget and purchasing law pertaining to Hennepin County, so I guess I wear each hat equally. As time progresses, however, I find myself more and more involved with the management aspects of as they relate to budgeting, unless we'll find a deal with the day-to-day problems of the purchasing function, after a given period of time becomes primarily a service function and rather routinized. I might add that this morning I started off at 8 o'clock addressing the Federal Management Institute in New Brighton and composed entirely of men. At 10 o'clock I'm here, and I think I prefer the legal women voters. And the subject of the panel first came up, and I found the people with whom I would be associated in this panel, namely elected officials, sometimes become quite apprehensive in this kind of a setting because when you're an administrator, you recognize the clear delineation between the policymakers and the administrators. Administrators implement what policymakers suggest, so you're kind of a little cautious about getting into areas that they're entitled to pontificate on and you're not. So anything I see today will be strong administrative positions, theirs will be strong policy positions. I'd like to touch briefly on two matters this morning by way of introduction. The first of which is the basic form and structure of county government as I know it from the Hennepin County vantage point. And the second matter is just briefly to discuss the joint exercise of power statute, which has been in the papers the last several days. Now, the county government, I would suggest to you, is a very important force in our daily lives. I think it pervades every level of our society. We take a look at the welfare activity at the county level. And although in Hennepin County we have the township system of relief, the direct relief expenditure is the only welfare or relief level left to the local level of government. All other welfare programs, the categorical aid programs, old age assistance, are county responsibilities. In Anoka County and in Ramsey County, they have the county system of relief, and all aspects of the welfare function are dealt with on the county level. In the area of health and hospitalization, we have, as we have recently seen, implementing legislation bringing to Hennepin County the new general hospital as a transfer from the core city. Ramsey County for many years has had a county hospital in the form of Anger. There is legislation on the books which permits a referendum to be put on the ballot or a statement to be put on the ballot allowing the creation of a county health department. I think we're some ways away from that, but I would suggest it is there for evaluation and examination. In the field of recreation, we have the Hennepin County Park Reserve District. In the field of law enforcement, we have not only the sheriff, who's the chief law enforcement officer, but of the state within the county. But we also have what I consider the most significant piece of legislation passed by the last session of the legislature, and that is the new county court bill. Because on January 1 next, we will have a uniform standard of justice on the municipal court level, which will prevail throughout the entire county. This law abolishes all the justice of the peace in all the local municipal courts and creates in lieu thereof a county court system, which will commence its deliberations on January 1. In the field of highways, I think the county of Hennepin has made a significant impact in this area. We commenced a program of systematically upgrading our highways, and hopefully will be considered a scientific basis as a consequence of a planning and programming report that was issued last summer. Hennepin County, I think, is unique in the state of Minnesota in that it has commenced freeway type construction along 62nd Street and County Road 18, I think, which stamps it as making real and genuine contribution to the field of highway expansion in the state of Minnesota. Now, we've made progress in county government despite the archaic and anachronistic laws with which counties are burdened. Now, what are the basic characteristics of counties? And I'll touch upon this a little bit. The county is really a political subdivision of the state of Minnesota. We witness the role of the treasurer, who is the chief collections officer of the state in the county. And this is the way he originally started out. Granted, he's assumed many more functions in the interim, but basically and constitutionally, this is the derivation of the office of the county treasurer. Similarly, the sheriff is a chief law enforcement officer of the state and the county. The county attorney is the chief prosecutor of the state of Minnesota within the county, and so on, with all the elected officials. They are actually performing state functions. The structure of county laws and the framework under which we exist, in the main, were constructed either the Constitution dating pre-1856 or in a set of laws, by and large, which occurred between the creation of Minnesota as a state in 1900-1910. And these sets of laws which govern the activities of county governments have not been comprehensively reviewed or evaluated or codified since that time. And I think herein lies our big problem, because we are the forgotten level of government. No one has really paid much attention to us until just recently. The same laws, and I think the Citizen League report just recently came up, brought this up, the same set of laws basically which govern Cook County up in the far northeastern portion of the state of Minnesota, 4,000 plus people, are the same sets of laws governing an urban county such as Hennepin with 950,000 people. It would relate to a situation whereby the village of Chanhassen would have to operate on the same basis, or better yet, the city of Minneapolis would have to operate on the same form and structure as delineated by statute as that of Chanhassen. It just doesn't make good sense. The county government exists in what I call a stultifying atmosphere. The basic reluctance of the state legislature to release their control over the county unit of government and launch counties as an independent governmental entity. Now, despite this, we're making progress. And I'll paint a black picture because I think in order to precipitate some interest and to encourage some positive changes, I think you have to paint a black picture. And despite this, counties are progressing, and we're getting along reasonably well, because the cancer is not the role of government, but its form and structure, as Mr. Price has indicated. One of the problems is that there's no central executive in county government, such as a mayor or an elected county executive, as many counties throughout the United States has had. Rather, it's a conclave of independent baronies, government by committee, some people have described it as. Now, this is the ostensible executive of county government, but exists within this framework of all the independent elected officials who have delineated duties defined by statute and look more to the state legislature than to county government for their activities. These elected officials have, in the main, with the exception, I would say, of the county sheriff, And the county attorney have no independent latitude, no independent discretion on their own. Their duties are carefully defined by statute. The prescription is there. And they look, as a consequence, more to the state legislature, because this is where relief and resources going to come for their activity rather than from the county board. So we have a real dichotomy of fund authority, for example, as between the state legislature and the county board. The county board sets the operating expense budgets of all departments operating under elected officials. The state legislature deals with the salary matters. And this is not only the department head, but every individual within that department. This happens on a 4 or 5 month basis every 2 years. The form and structure of county government, I would liken to a triangle rather than a pyramid. Because most of the time when you're alluding to governmental structure, you're talking about a pyramid. I would define it as a triangle with three legs, whereby the state legislature is one leg, the county board is another leg, and the elected officials is another leg, and therefore you get no central resolution of problems. The result is no key cohesiveness and no sense of direction. Can we assess the blame? And I think we can, in two areas. One at the feet of the state legislature and one at the county board of commissioners. Because I don't think the county boards generally have addressed themselves to this problem and have been content to allow the resolution of problems to prevail at the state level. And it's only when county boards themselves get sufficiently exercised about this inability to operate that you'll get some positive resolution of the problem. Now, every aspect of county operation must be bounced off the state legislature if there are to be any changes made. And this is from the most important level of governmental change to the most minute housekeeping changes. Just let me allude to two of them, which I'm familiar with. And a very important law was passed in the 1961 session, which allows counties, and this I might indicate came as a consequence of some very effective lobbying activity on the part of the State Association of County Commissioners, Mr. Kide, allows counties to establish a central purchasing department. Now, prior to 1961, there were only three counties in the state which had a central purchasing function, the Hennepin, Stearns, and St. Louis. Now, in this day and age, this doesn't make good sense. To spend tax dollars without a central standard of control. And yet it took until 1961 before the legislature, in its wisdom, addressed itself to this basic internal problem. This is one. This, I think, would be major. Last session, the county board of Hennepin County solicited legislation to make a one-sentence change in a bond law which covers the fidelity bonds for officials of the county who have to be bonded because of their exposure to finances, or who may make policy decisions that will have ultimate financial implications for the county. This is to simplify the administrative procedure in the soliciting of bids and the administration of the bond. This is routine and mundane a kind of activity as you can possibly imagine, and yet this routine administrative change had to go before the state legislature and became a bill, a state law, if you will. Now, the elected officials I indicated before are oriented in the direction of the state legislature for two very good reasons. One is because their salary is set there, and secondly, because any changes within the framework of the operation of their office must come as a consequence of changes ordered by the state legislature. And this is really very important, unfortunate, because the consequences are that you sometimes get a rejection at the local level of management techniques in which the board or other people are trying to introduce, which may cut across cross-departmental line. We have some problems now in the areas of data processing and microfilming. Another real indictable area that I would lay at the feet of the state legislature is this whole area of personnel. Because in the county of Hennepin, we now have four separate personnel systems, and on January 1 next, we'll have five. State welfare marriage system, and this is 2,400 employees. This doesn't make any sense at all. We have 2,400 employees. We have the state welfare marriage system, which is a civil service type system which administers the county welfare department. We have a a merit system for those employees directly under the county board. We have the Salary and Classification Commission, which is a loose confederation of elected officials who, under the auspices of a state statute, administer the personnel activities of employees under elected officials. The judges of the district court control the activities of the employees of the court and the Department of Court Services. And on January 1 next, the judges of the municipal court will control the personnel activities of the new county court. Now, we had a bill over there the last session, which had the support of the county board, the Salary and Classification Commission, the district court judges, to try and bring some cohesiveness, some sense of order into this. And this was not given the time of day, never even had the courtesy to get out of committee. Now, this is, I've suggested, the kind of control that state legislatures exercise over the operation of county government. I think there is a distrust in part on the part of the legislature of county boards. Witness the fact that in many cases, when new functions are set up, you get independent commissions. In the years, whenever a county sanatorium had to be set up, a separate sanatorium commission was set up. The last episode, I think we had two of them. One was the Hennepin County Park Reserve District, which they did not feel should become a county board responsibility, but rather was subjected to an independent commission. And yet the appointing authority in the first instance was the county board. The mental health program in the state of Minnesota is implemented only through the creation of independent boards, which county board members can sit on, but they're nonetheless citizen boards, which are separate apart from the normal activity. I suggest this has some democratic implications, because this is one step removed from the electorate, and we get into the whole question of accountability. I rambled on here for a little while, and I raised some questions and some problems. I think I should give you some answers. The first of which, I think, is the fact that the Citizens League has studied at some length for approximately 1 year this whole form and structure of government, and the government relates to Hamilton County, and have come out within the last week what I consider an excellent report, which alludes to many of these things that I have discussed, and suggests that a home rule charter be created for the county of Hennepin for the purpose of defining its exact role and relationship in the spectrum of governmental activity in Hennepin County. I would commend this report to you and would urge you to get it if you have an opportunity to do so. The other thing that I would ask for, as a minimum, is some basic administrative reorganization for county government, in order to cast us in an image that is ready to accept the responsibilities of the 20th century, or perhaps the 21st century, rather than the 19th century where we're all cast. And this relates to such simple things as what I would call functional consolidation. And by functional consolidation, I'm relating to such activities as a collections authority. Right now, you walk in the Hennepin County Courthouse, you can pay money in the Department of Court Services, in the Sheriff's Office, in the Auditor's Office, in the Register of Deeds, in the Treasurer, in the Clerk of District Court, in the Clerk of Probate Court, and probably a few others that I haven't named. Functional consolidation would allow the creation of a cashier's cage at an appropriate entrance to the building, whereby people coming to the courthouse for the purpose of paying monies in an official capacity to the County of Hennepin could make one stop and thereby resolve their problems. This is just one isolated example. Let me just briefly touch, I've gone over my time with it, but just let me briefly touch on this whole area of the joint exercise of power statute, because I think it appears that you'll see a court test of this particular statute. The joint exercise of power statute briefly says that powers common to political subdivision of the state may be exercised jointly, or by one or the other on a contract basis. And my little confrontation with the office of the sheriff and the service of criminal and traffic warrants with respect to the new county court suggests that a contract system be evolved with the local police departments of the county of Hennepin, whereby they would continue to serve the traffic and criminal warrants as they have in the past. And for this, the county would give them a fee for service, which would make them perhaps a little more attractive to them, But over and above this, there are direct savings to the county of $170,000. In addition, we're generating $80,000 of new income to the several suburbs and municipalities of Hennepin County. The contract system we propose is under this joint exercise of power statute. We have an opinion from the county attorney which indicates that this is a valid extension of this law, and on this basis, I think the board this morning will promulgate such a move. As a matter of fact, I really should be there. I see one of my other friends, Mrs. Wilson there, who I see is also playing hooky on the county board. But I would suggest that you watch the papers very carefully over the next several months, and it would appear to me that the sheriff, on the basis of his expressions today, indicates that he does not feel inclined to cooperate with this proposed use of the powers in the joint exercise of power statute, and therefore will fight it up to the Supreme Court. I guess this is an important court test, and I, in a sense, welcome it, because I think that the proper use of the Joint Exercise of Powers Act can go a long way in solving, on a uniform and on a cooperative basis, many of the local governmental problems that we do have here in Hennepin County. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stan. I'm going to ask the other two gentlemen to speak before we open the meeting up for general discussion. Our next speaker is Bob Johnson. Bob has, in addition to his official capacities, has had the occasion, because he's a native of Anoka County, to watch what one time, not very many years ago, as recounting as we're visiting this morning preparatory to his panel, when I used to hitchhike back and forth in the Iron Range to law school over the university, I went through a lot of open country before I came to the city of Anoka. Today, this is quite impossible. In fact, we're going almost all the way to Elk River before really seeing wide open country that I remember a few years ago while a university student. So Bob has seen the development of a truly rural county now into a metropolitan county, certainly a suburban county to these two core metropolitan cities. Call him Bob Johnson, Anoka County Attorney.
Thank you very much, Ralph. It's a pleasure to have the opportunity of speaking with you for a few moments. I find it a little difficult to fit in with what Stan was presenting to you. My idea or approach will be quite different, and perhaps that is all right. There are certain basic assumptions that I would like to start out with, and I think this will probably fit in with what Don is going to talk about. I would assume that all of us, if we had our druthers, would like to be completely independent, that we would like to be able to provide for ourselves all those functions that we need to live, that we would not necessarily like to have to join with other people in order to provide the services that we need to live by. Maybe this is my rural background. I was born and raised on a farm where law enforcement was the watchdog we had, and the gun was hanging in the corner. The matter of sewer was very readily taken care of by that little house outside. That water was something that you pumped out of a well, and so on. And that snow plowing was something that you hitched the team onto a homemade plow and plowed your way out to the road where you could find your way into town. Now, obviously, we've gone a long way since we've reached from that point. Now, the reason for that homely kind of a background in the present presentation that I want to make would be that we then must relate the services that people demand in terms of today's society and anticipate it in terms of tomorrow's society. I'm talking about those things that relate to the conveniences that we expect and call the necessities of life, which in fact they are. Water, sewer, transportation, police, planning, these things that transcend individual family ability to take care of. They then go to the next coordinating force, which would be your unit of government, your local unit of government, which would be the municipality or the township. And if, in fact, the responsibility becomes too great for them because of the social or economic inability of that unit to provide it, then obviously you're going to have to look to the next unit of government, which would be your county. And if that then cannot provide the service, you then look to BU in the metropolitan area, such as we are, to the metropolitan, some type of a metropolitan complex, or some type of federation, or as we have so many districts formed, we have watershed districts and sewer districts and library districts and fire districts. This becomes an exceedingly complicated and complex maze of governmental structure if you ever get into studying all the ramifications of it. Now, what is it that, well, let me back off a little bit and give you a little of the background that I'm going to say the next thing on. As a member of the Municipal Commission, we've conducted hearings now throughout the state of Minnesota, and we've listened to people very conscientiously saying, we can take care of our own problems. We're getting along fine. We want to take care of ourselves. This is very commendable. You then would question them in regard to their ability to take care of some of these services, and this happened at the hearing just yesterday, as a matter of fact. This individual got up and said, why they're pumping sewer right into the creek that runs down the back. The effluent goes in there without being treated. Something has to be done about it. This was his first day. So we challenged him in a casual way in regard to how you propose it should be done. Well, it seems that the closest sewer to line to that particular subdivision is 5 miles. So we start talking about how are you going to do something about this. Well, then he started talking about taxes. We can't afford to do this. Well, what's your alternative? Burn the house down? You know, you have to come to grips with the problem, which means that you have to sensibly sit down and analyze what it is that people are demanding and how best those services can be provided. Now, the thing that we over and over again run into, and these become kind of delicate and still power plays, the matter of local autonomy and the right of self-rule, the right of self-determination, what people can choose, the type of government they want, and they can choose how they are going to be governed. And I submit to you that this is a very fine premise to start from, but this then anticipates that everyone is fully informed of what it is they're choosing. And unfortunately, this does not always happen. Now, what it is they're choosing means, can they in fact afford to ride in Cadillacs, or are they going to get by with a small compact car or a second-hand one? Can they go alone, is what I'm saying. Can they afford to go alone? Have you been able to give to these people the choice that it's going to cost them $1,000 a lot, for example, if they're going to go it alone, but it'll cost them $500 a lot if they're able to join with another municipality or a larger federation in order to provide the same service? These types of choices are not necessarily given to people, and as a result, they can't make an intelligent choice. Now, where does that apply to county government? Well, it applies to county government in this way, that there are many, many services that everyone will readily admit. I shouldn't say many, many. That looks like a great number. There are several services that everyone will readily admit transcend municipal life. And these are the ones that I mentioned earlier. Everyone knows that if a municipality is going to efficiently provide sewer services for their people, they necessarily have to either live with their neighbor, plan with their neighbor, and this anticipates a regional area that you're talking about. That being the case, then that particular facet logically could be delegated to the next unit of government, which would be your county unit of government. Now we talk, another one would be planning. In this matter of planning, there is a tremendous, tremendous amount of pressure. It has always been interesting to me that you can talk about youth activities, for example, and the need for providing an the real critical need for providing youth activities for, or youth opportunity for young people. And you get a smattering of people out, you won't get very many. But when you start talking about local autonomy and control of the services that people are going to have, you will fill the hall and people will come and scream in regard to this matter of planning, because they feel that it is infringing upon their some right that they have, which of course they do have. But I don't think that people have really analyzed this thing out. Actually, when you're talking about, let's take water and sewer. In regard to water and sewer, regardless of whether it is transmitted to the county for a regional plan, that particular project is not going to be initiated unless the people want it. You still have the local control function that you would have otherwise. It seems to me that they talk about the matter of control, but they think of it in terms of electing the officials that are controlling the destiny of the particular project that's being undertaken. Well, they're not electing engineers. Whether it's a council or whether it's a county board, they have to hire an engineer who tells them whether it's economically feasible, whatever the project is. They take the word of the engineer. So actually, that particular facet of their concern should not be as great as the matter of control of whether the project should be initiated to start. I use that as just one example. A second example would be that of policing. Now, they say they want to control policing. This one always mystifies me. I don't know whether they want to be able to fix tickets or just what they're talking about. But as I live with this matter of law enforcement, and believe me, this has become a highly technical and requires highly skilled and trained men. If we're going to keep up with the law, the change in the laws through the new criminal code and the change in the interpretation of the Constitution by our Supreme Court, the last one as recent as last week, and every one of them are becoming so restrictive, not wrong, but restrictive, that they require highly trained policemen to be able to carry out the investigative process that you talk about. I think very often you talk about policemen and you think of them all in terms of being investigators. This is not true. A policeman from the standpoint of patrolling, fine, you can keep that on the local level. When you start talking about investigating, you're talking about a very, very technical field that requires highly skilled people and requires much training. If the municipality involved has a low tax base, for example, or not an adequate tax base to provide the trained individuals, obviously you're not going to get adequate law enforcement. I've sort of rambled around in regard to this. I would like to say to you that whether the county government is ready because of the archaic laws that control it or not is an academic question and one that should be studied and reviewed. There are some revisions that should be made in county laws in order to give them the type of a government structure within which they can, in fact, implement these various responsibilities that I think should be delegated to them. If, in fact, the responsibility should transcend county lines, then obviously the next logical thing is to set up some sort of a metropolitan complex, some sort of a metropolitan federation, rather, and make that of county officials or some plan such as this that should be resolved to take care of their municipal responsibilities. This is not unique. Various plans throughout the United States and Canada that are similar to this in solution to municipal growing problems or metropolitan growing problems. I think this, in brief, when you try to cram into 10 minutes all the thoughts that are coming around in my head in regard to the hearings that we've conducted and the problems that we've been facing, it's a little difficult. But I think it's just simply the matter of thinking of it in terms of your own, all of the services you demand, that certain of these can be taken care of by a municipality, certain of them transcend municipal lines. They stay within a regional structure, and it seems to me the logical regional structure then becomes the county. And then if you want to look at county government and its ability to handle it, this is a matter that is of legislative reform. And it should shouldn't startle you that it's a little archaic, because we have gone through a social revolution, as we all know, in the last 15 years, one that you couldn't possibly have anticipated. And all the predictions are that this will continue and be even greater changes in the years to come. So our laws have to be changed in order to comply with the responsibilities that might be delegated. I think this is, Ralph, as far as I would go in my presentation. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Bob. Our next speaker is Don Cafferty, a member of the Washington County Board. Here is a county that, again, is in this emerging role as a suburban bedroom area for the metropolitan city. Stillwater, the county seat of Washington County, one of the very oldest of our established communities in this state. You know, this area that we are in here now is all part of the state of Wisconsin at one time. And Stillwater was a very important community in a county of Wisconsin before we came to state territory. Don is not that old, but he comes with this background of an old, old community wrestling with new problems. Don Cafferty.
Thank you, Ralph. You've heard the professionals up until this time this morning. Now you listen to a layman who has to help administer some of these things that they have been talking about. As far as Washington County is concerned, we are a small county population-wise in comparison to Ramsey, Hennepin, and Anoka County now. Anoka County was facing about the same problems 15 years ago, starting 15 years ago, as we're facing now. We've talked about some of the weaknesses of county government, some of the strong points of county government. I would like to visit with you just a few minutes this morning on how county government actually operates. There are three or four main areas of county government. Personally, I believe in home rule. Personally, at one time, I used to think that a person was entitled to any type of government or school system that they desire. I'm not so sure of that today. I don't think that we can have, because of situations of this population explosion, crossing of lines, I think that's impossible. But here are some of the problems that you're facing under county government, whether you're a huge metropolitan county or whether you're a growing county as we are. County officials or county commissioners actually operate under the arm of the state legislature. These authorities have been handed down by the legislature over a period of years. Some of the funds that we spend are federal funds, some are state funds, some are county funds. We will operate in three or four main areas. General revenue, which might not mean a great deal to you, but that is the tax fund that we collect from you people, the taxpayer, to operate the general pattern of county government, such as maintaining the courthouse, paying the clerk hire or salaries of the people that work for the county, and any other incidentals that come into that part of the operation. Surprising to some of you, you might not know that many of the counties have a mill limit on what they can assess for this type of operation. In my own county, we have a mill limit levy of 15 mills in Washington County. So many times when people say, why don't you do this or do that, there's only one answer. We're collecting as much money as we can under general revenue. And unless we get greater valuation, there isn't a great deal we can do as far as the expenditure is concerned. Another area that we operate under, and we operate with federal, state, and county funds, is the Road and Bridge Fund. In my own county, our Road and Bridge mill levy limit is 20 mils. So when you're spending, if you are spending 20 mils, we're spending 19 and a half this year. We're building and maintaining, to the best of our ability, about all the roads we can, unless, again, there's a special act of the legislature that tells you or permits you to spend more money. The other area, which is a large amount, and there is no mill levy limit on this, is the welfare fund. And I'm sure you're all familiar with that. Now, there we're getting into large amounts of federal funds, the same as we are the road and bridge. And when you get into anyone else's pocketbook, they usually have the right to tell you how to spend part of that money. And this is true in this case. I'm sure you've all read of the Kerr Mills bill. It's an operation has been in the state of Minnesota. We had no choice. The welfare department said this is to be done. I'm not saying whether it's good or bad. That is for people like you to study and decide. But I am saying it is costing the taxpayer more money to begin with. Maybe we will save money in the long run. But that is one reason that county taxes go up. Some other areas that we work in, and is very important to some of you, and I see some of the league people from my own county, and I'll assure you that they're interested in it. But some of the special levies, mental health has been made mention of before, retarded children, a bill has been passed that you may have a school for retarded children or a center for retarded children. It isn't quite clear, as far as the legislature is concerned, where you're to collect the money, but you have the right to establish one. In certain counties, I think there's no question about it. And another one that's very important to Washington County is parks and recreation, because everyone comes to Washington County and says, well, you have a wonderful county, so much open space, so much recreation, so much area for parks, and we have. Maybe too much. And just to show you how county government is operating in this area. We have the recreation area. Now we have growing pains, one of the largest industries in the state, as far as finances are concerned, wants to move into our area. We think it would be wonderful if they did. It would give us a tax base to do some of the things that we would like to do. But as I said before, maybe we can't have the type of community that we want. We're close to a huge metropolitan area, and many of the people in the area are quite concerned about our St. Croix River. I live on it, and I think it'd be beautiful to see a few more barges go up. But those that are there on Sunday, I'm sure feel that they'd like to have a few of the small boats off. But those are some of the problems that we're facing. These are some of the basic things that county government faces. It happens to be us in this case. It could just as well be a lake here or a river at Anoka that someone will be facing next week. And if you're going to provide open spaces, someone's going to have to pay the school tax, they're going to have to pay the general revenue, the road and bridge fund, the special levies. Now, how that is to be done, whether it's more economical to do it on a local level, to do it on a county level, to do it on a metropolitan level, those are decisions that have to be made. I think that county government, if given the proper tools and the proper help, can do a pretty fine job, with the exception of maybe two or three areas. In our land and transportation study, that's just been made, we know that we can't build all the roads that a county needs, because it isn't only our people or your people in this county that uses those roads. And it's folly to build a road and have it run over to Ramsey County or Hennepin County and stop and no main thoroughfare leading from that point on. That's happened many times and many times too often. But that can be solved with a joint study program, I'm sure. Mr. Johnson mentioned sewage disposal with sewer systems. I'm sure that that has to be an area in which all counties or communities have to work together. But many of these services that you want can be serviced to you through county government. And the reason that I think that it is important is that you do have some control. You do have someone that you can go to locally, that you can talk your problems over. They are mutual problems, and usually you understand those problems. I think so often when we use certain types of professional advice, that they have a wonderful concept and a wonderful knowledge of bringing these things together and putting them into a study or format or conclusion. But many a time, they do not understand our real problems that we are trying to solve. I was thinking of that this morning as I was driving over. Maybe some of you are from this area. I know it's not far from you. But I happened to hear Superintendent Cooper last night from Robinson, and I think he put it very aptly. He said, if you want 1,700 kids to go to children, I'm sorry, have to go to school next year, or 2 years from now, you're going to have to provide classroom space for them. Now, he knows the situation. I'm sure that the people that work with him know the situation. That's the problem. And the way to solve the problem, I think, is with people that know the problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. About this point, we're done with the prepared script. We knew we were going to talk to call on these people to talk. So now, perhaps we just open this up to some questions. Maybe we can kind of put this into some sort of an order in a wrap-up fashion a little later, but I'm sure that you must have questions of one or another of us who have been speaking this morning. Somebody want to start? I've been asked the question, are there emerging areas of cooperation, did you preface this on between counties or between county, a county and a municipality? Either or both. I'm going to ask one or two of these gentlemen to answer in specifics, probably for their county as examples. The answer to the question is yes to all parts of it, with this exception. It's been going on for a very long time and has not had the publicity and the attention. These are the quiet things that municipal councils, county boards work out, make part of their operation, and with relatively rare exceptions, we don't get very much publicity on some of these cooperative acts. The word functional consolidation, the term functional consolidation, was mentioned here today. As we talk about two municipalities joining to perform a common function, two counties, or a county with one or more municipalities within it, or even an adjoining county, this is the practical application of this high-sounding term of functional consolidation. Stan was mentioning one. I wonder if either you two gentlemen could mention one or two in your counties. I'm thinking of Bob and Don.
Well, I'd mention a few. For example, we have established a countywide communication system as far as the police are concerned. And this was a joint effort that where all the municipalities were brought together and could only be done upon their willingness to cooperate, which they did. I'm thinking of probably the most recent one was the joint effort made on the junior college. You had the same thing, Don, and all the municipalities joined together there. can indicate some that started this way and then failed. Probably the one that's been in the paper the most that is still not failed, but in far as some units of government, they pulled away from it, and that was what's called the North Suburban Hospital District, which was joined together, had to be a voluntary thing. It was under the special act that allowed them to join together for this function. And that was all peaches and cream when they started. And everybody loved everybody else like a brother. But as you got closer to some kind of a solution, why people started dropping off to one side. You see, the individual kind of selfish interests sometimes get in there and cause cleavages. You recall the North Suburban Sanitary District is another one that had, where they got together on a joint basis. And they weathered some very bitter storms. Functioning, some have dropped by the wayside. The Joint Powers Act provides the opportunity, but at least much to be desired in some aspect.
Well, one of the things that we have been doing the last 3 or 4 years, and I mentioned it as speaking up here, is a joint effort with our townships and municipalities in the construction of roads. Because many times the township or the county, whichever it might be, did not realize what the main thoroughfare of traffic was for this community or this township. So before we built any road these last few years, we have contacted the municipalities that might be involved, and we've come to a common agreement, and we've had, as a result of that, we've had, we think, a much better highway system and a savings to the taxpayer, because we have agreed on which roads are the main thoroughfares or channels of traffic in these areas.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'd like to add just an observation or two with regard to this general field on a statewide basis. Take you out of the metropolitan area for a moment. Under the Community Mental Health Act, Community Mental Health Clinic Act of 1957, the Act permits these mental health clinics to be established by a municipality, by a county, or a nonprofit corporation. But the pattern of the community mental health clinics on a statewide basis is a county or multi-county situation. Memory doesn't take me right up to date on this, but there must be no less than 15 of these community mental health clinics existent throughout the state with a combination system of two or more counties. There are some that are municipal county, rather one that is a municipal county operation, and that's the Rochester-Olmsted County Community Mental Health Clinic. There are a number of them with two counties, several with four or five counties, one in the Red River Valley area, some eight counties cooperating with Community Mental Health Clinic. It's the pattern of the operation of community mental health clinics in a multi-county situation. In the field of welfare, the legislature provided a very sweeping addition to the law in 1963, whereby in a county situation such as Mr. Cowell described, wherein the county still subscribes to the so-called town system of administering its cash or general relief, the law does provide that the municipality within the county can contract with the county welfare board for the administration of its relief program. For practical purposes, any town or municipality can contract with the county for the administration of its cash or general relief operation. In Hennepin County specifically, I think this goes up through the cities of the second class. This was extended in 1961 to another group of municipalities, and there are many municipalities in Hennepin County that are using the administrative device of the county welfare agency to administer their cash or general relief. There are many such examples throughout the state. It would take me the rest of the morning to start, because it's kind of a thing like a snowball rolling downhill. As you think of one, you think of another. A number of counties are using the device of having the sheriff's department administer internal policing services, as an example. Yet another case of multi-unit cooperation. Stan, does this bring to mind something you might want to add on this point, or should we move to another? Are there other questions? Here we have one here, please.
I'd like to know if special legislation is always necessary, as it must have been with Crown Health Act, for counties to cooperate, or can they, and do they actually cooperate anyway as a joint contact with social agencies?
Actually, in the case of the Community Mental Health Clinic Act, there is no specific provision in the Community Mental Health Clinic Act to provide for multi-unit cooperation. The Joint Powers Act is the basis by which they got together, basically. Now, there's some ramifications in this because some of them, after organizing as a multi-county unit, have gone to the nonprofit corporation form for internal advantages. Let's get away from that. So this is actually now a service contract between the counties and the core unit of the nonprofit corporation. There are many. This is the torturing part of the use of the Joint Powers Act. Unfortunately, people, and this is the condemnation of these areas of special interest, be it mental health, may it be the field of the retardation, the youngsters, detention facilities, planning, many of these others, the well-meaning people that are specifically interested in a particular problem, they suffer a little bit from channel vision at this point. They develop the enthusiasm to persuade the legislature to get the enabling legislation enacted, and then with great detail we want to spell out how we perform the functions. And there's some of us that get in and muddy the water and say, look, this straitjacketing is unnecessary, leave this to the Joint Powers Act. And once in a while we're able to persuade the legislature that it can be done. We do like but every now and then as a compromise, put in one simple line in a piece of enabling legislation and say that the units of government can cooperate using the details of the Joint Powers Act as they develop their working relationships. A specific example of this is the Act passed in 1963 to provide for regional or multi-county detention facilities. This was aimed specifically at a problem arising in the Red River Valley, immediately north of the Twin Cities here, Isani, Kanata County, those counties there, where we had to have some means by which several counties possibly could get together and develop a jail or detention facility for more than a single county. One line in that act said that the cooperative agreement could use the format laid down in the Joint Powers Act. Let me digress to make another observation. It's been part and parcel of what we've been talking about, but I think for you ladies it's worthy of identification. And that is, we've talked about the straitjacketing of the form and structure of county government. This applies a great deal to municipalities as well. It was enunciated and set down by a gentleman by the name of Dillon, a judge from Pennsylvania, a teacher, lecturer in the field of local governmental law. It's now known as the Dillon Rule. And it says, in essence, that units of local government have only those powers specifically given them by the legislature, or those that can be reasonably inferred from the grant of authority. Now, this was laid down, can't even remember the date, like 1880, that many years ago. But it's a viable rule of law today, unfortunately. Let me I don't have the notes quite at hand, but I wanted to actually read from an opinion of the Attorney General's office less than 6 months ago, almost those identical words. This is our problem. And applying to the Joint Powers Act, we've found time and time and again that we've been restricted because somebody says, look, this doesn't give you the specific authority. This is the key to the legal dispute that has existed in Hennepin County with use of the Joint Powers Act. And the Joint Powers Act specifically get down to this contracting thing to provide for the service of process. This is the essential issue here. This is not only fighting personalities, but this is sort of frills on the thing. The basic issue is, did the legislature grant to these units of local government the authority to contract in this particular field? What is the grant of authority? Go back to this Dillon Rule. Fortunately, we see on a nationwide aspect some breakdown of the Dillon Rule. The new constitution adopted in Michigan, I think this is Article 7 of that constitution, you can find it, it's their local government section of that new constitution, says that the laws relating to local government shall be liberally interpreted. In other words, this, by constitutional provision, eradicating the operation of the Dillon Rule as applied to local government in Michigan. This is the constitutional provision. Let's wait and see what the courts do with it. The courts have lived for several generations with the Dillon Rule. They're going to find it difficult to depart from it.
Are you answering her question then by saying that yes, special legislation is necessary and that the Joint Powers Act is only useful as a definition within the legislation?
It's impossible to answer the question categorically on a yes or no. I'm trying to point out that unfortunately, the pattern has developed that it isn't special legislation, because ordinarily we define special legislation as a bill relating to an individual unit of government, that is a single city, a single township, a single school district, a single county. But in a particular area, generally speaking, the pattern has been to say that multi-unit cooperation can come about using the Joint Powers Act for the format of their agreement. Now, to this extent, no, it does not require special legislation for the individual unit, the individual unit of government. But generally, the conservatives say, get it in the act, and then you know you have the authority to do it. But there are literally dozens of areas where we use it with no specific grant of authority. The juvenile probation officers hired by many of the counties operate by just using the Joint Powers Act, nothing further. I've gotten away from my panel here for a moment. Let's get a question I can field to one of them, please. There must be questions.
I'm wondering if the question related to whether the Joint Powers Act was sufficient to take care of the services that might be required that transcend the municipal line.
Well, more or less. Really, I'd like to know counties do anything together. The only thing I really know of is the state control district, which was a result of a special act of the legislature. And I have tried to find out what counties do with each other together. I discovered a few things today which I never knew before, and I'm just curious if this is done.
Before I let Bob talk, I'm going to answer you specifically on the mosquito control. The mosquito control district grew in an operation of the Joint Powers Act. This is inception was in this operation. I think this is only one man's judgment. I think that the board of the Mosquito Control District made a mistake going to the legislature and getting a special act. I don't think it was necessary. I think they should have gone and strengthened the Joint Powers Act. The net result would have been the same. Because actually, in that special act for the Mosquito Control District, they listed everything they did at that time. Every function they performed, every operational setup, all their procedures. The unfortunate mistake they made is they locked them into the statute. So they don't have the freedom to change it.
Well, I was just going to comment that the Joint Powers Act presumes that each unit has this given authority to start. And there are a great many things that county government does not have any authority to become involved in, and hence they cannot cooperate because they don't have the basic authority to start. They have no authority to go into water, sewer, that type of thing. The recent one, Ralph, that you have is planning, that counties would go into planning, but then this restricted to the unincorporated areas. So when you start talking about Joint Powers Act in this regard, it becomes a very unwieldy thing. But unless the unit of government has that power to start with, there's nothing that they can cooperate with.
I think we can add one line in that. One of the The Joint Powers Act, as I know it, and it was put on the law of statute books before I got into the kind of assignment I now hold, originated from a request by the League of Minnesota Municipalities to the legislature to enact a Joint Powers Act. It's patterned, as I know it, after the California Act. It's been on the books since 1943, if my memory serves me correct, at the time that it originated. And, of course, it's been subject to attorney general's opinions and county attorneys, municipal attorneys' opinions in the ensuing time. We found ourselves completely straitjacketed in one aspect of using the Joint Powers Act a few years ago when the Attorney General's office said that it couldn't operate in this situation, that Unit A would perform the service entirely and Unit B merely pay money. This was a peculiar thing. Said that you couldn't use the whole, and I don't take notes on this, whole law. You couldn't do it. So we went to the legislature in 61, joining our association, the League of Minnesota Municipalities, and said, let us put into the Joint Powers Act the provision that one unit could contribute only money to the performance of this service under a contract having its legal validity, the Joint Powers Act. So little by little by little, we are strengthening the Joint Powers Act. We think that some of these things where specific authorities are granted are actually deterrents to using the Joint Powers Act as a very flexible device for units of government to get together. I think we're torturing the Joint Powers Act. Maybe some other questions. Yes, ma'am?
What in your estimation was the reason for the Joint Powers Act originally and why? In other words, why did they
We're getting down to argue some details. I don't think that the act was this detailed. It was patterned after California's law. California, in the state of California, they were doing these very things. But unfortunately, we got an interpretation that said we couldn't. So we said, all right, if we're going to be limited by the interpretation, we'll get the law changed. And this is precisely what we did. I think we have a gentleman in the rear who might make a comment, and we're invading on his subject for this afternoon. This is why I don't want to go further. Lee? Irish are always guilty of answering a question with the question, and I'm reminded of a little story. President Roosevelt was bugging Jimmy Walker about this very thing. He says, Jimmy, why is it that you Irish always answer a question with a question? To which Walker replied, do we? I'm going to answer your question by asking, what do you mean by spreading the tax base? I think you're probing a point here, and I want to get at it. Getting off into a marvelous area of discussion. One of the things that we have come to today, Mr. Johnson was attempting to probe it, and to an extent Stan was touching on it, and Don was talking at least the county line of this, and that is, as we think of the services to be performed and to be provided, we must think of the resource to pay for that. Now, you're talking about, first of all, taking the money away from a municipality and giving it to others. Oh, what heresy in a local government situation. But basically, the other part of the thing is the place that we can attack it, and that is taking a look at the kind of service. Bob Johnson's talk, in other words. Look at the kind of service and then make some reasonable, mature decision as to whether or not a municipal unit, a township unit, a county unit, a metropolitan unit shall provide the service. Now, this is all we can do, because I do not think that until we would go to something very strong like metro government, and I don't expect to see metro government in the years that I have remaining on this area, in our Twin City metropolitan area, in terms of the Toronto type, a very, very strong metropolitan government. So I think it's better that we take a look at the service and see what is the criteria with regard to the service. Is it one that can be performed locally to great satisfaction? Is it one that takes a larger area? How large is this area? The unfortunate part of it is these lines have been put on the Earth's surface. They're only imaginary, really. Setting off townships, setting off municipalities and counties and so on. And what we're struggling with here actually is how do we transcend them in many of the instances when we've got, what is it, 1.5 million people, maybe more. Ray Posey from the MPC is giving more accurate comments as to the population of our area here. How do we attack providing of these services, I think a more practical one, rather than trying to take money away. This is what how local municipalities and units will interpret your comment. Rather, let's take a look at the service and who should actually perform, allowing them to maintain and preserve their tax source. If you're going off into the realm of saying there should be another kind of tax revenue, another tax source, be it a sales tax or something else, this is, again, a very lively discussion, and maybe we need this for county government.
Well, I think, one more burning question, then you have to get out some lunch over.
I would like to know if each county would adopt a home rule charter, and they would then incorporate in that charter some of these powers which they do not have now. Would they then cooperate under the Joint Powers Act?
To answer that question fully, we'd have to back up and give a better dissertation on the Joint Powers Act itself. It's gotten out of focus here. I would refer you to the report of the Citizens League of Hennepin County for a definitive statement. Actually, they talk about the charter for the purpose of accomplishing administrative form, not functional change. And I think this is the first step. Certainly, this is part of, I think, Stan's comment, that we've got to change the form so that this is a viable, active, aggressive, dynamic unit of government. And then when we have proved the point that we can be facile and adapt to the problems at hand, then more authorities, functional authorities, will come to county government. The charter method is not a way, really, of getting more authorities for county government in the functional sense. It properly should be one of having authority to change its administrative form. But once we have proved our worth, I'm answering for county people, once we have proved our worth by improving our image, then we think that the legislature will give us these responsibilities. But if you study the new authorities given to county governments in the last few years, it's a tremendous addition to the governmental authorities. Parks, 61, planning, 59, community health deal, the daycare centers revised in 1963, many, many of them like this. Again, somebody's going to take us a long, long time to discuss. The charter, I think, repeating, is a change, is a means by which we can get change in the administrative form, and probably shouldn't be thought of as the device by which counties would be given new services, or new authorities to provide services more accurately.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry we can't have more questions, but I'm hoping the gentleman will stay for lunch, and you will feel free to come up and talk to us individually about your questions. Now we would like to clear the hall so that luncheon tables may be set up.